and psychism are appealing. First, it's a clever ploy to turn mind into a property that all things exhibit. Unlike weighing the soul as it leaves the body at the moment of death, a property doesn't need to have measurable weight and dimension, nor does it come and go. For example, being either male or female is a property among mammals, but it can't be extracted like drawing blood to see how much each gender weighs or what color it is. Second, panpsychism allows for the universe to act mind-like as its natural behavior, instead of an odd peculiarity among quanta. This alone would help make the theory popular, except for a fatal flaw. When you claim that mind is a property of matter, what's equally possible is the exact opposite. Matter is a property of mind. One cannot be proved over another. When certain hormones kick in, two people might rush into each other's arms to begin having sex. But just as plausibly, a person can think, "I have a little free time. Maybe having sex would be nice." And this thought triggers the hormones. So our behavior, right down to the quantum level, makes simple cause and effect unworkable. To say that matter acts like mind or that mind acts like matter won't do either way. Otherwise, we wind up saying weird things like, "The wetness of water is what made people want to swim." A mere property isn't a cause. Human experience is the last thing anyone should want to exclude when explaining the cosmos. Let's see if we can acquire a vocabulary of inclusion. Reality is all-inclusive, without a doubt, and almost miraculously, human beings can embrace an infinite variety of what reality has to offer. Where is the switching mechanism that decides to gaze at a gorgeous sunset while ignoring the texture of the ground beneath your feet? Or indulging in the touch of a beloved while totally shutting out what the furniture in the room looks like? We do these things so automatically that we take them for granted. The critical issue is what it means to experience the world. The answer is that we experience the world through choice. There is no given world. If Newton's apple was anything like the one sold at the supermarket, it was red, sweet, crunchy, slightly grainy in texture, and within a certain range of weight. None of these properties exists in nature. They are perceptions of the human mind. The apple doesn't need to be reinvented every time you encounter it. Once your perception has decided that apples taste like apples rather than pears or avocados, they stay that way in your mental setup. As we saw earlier, reality is filtered through the brain and its built-in limitations. Recall the revolutionary thinking about this by Arthur Korzybski. But the brain's imperfection doesn't negate a simple fact. Everything we perceive is a mental creation, accumulated over millions of years of evolution. It sounds strange to say that we chose for apples to be sweet, because that happened long, long ago. Once sweetness became part of our perception, it was expressed physically in our taste buds, which in turn are encoded in our genes. A separate apparatus for liking or disliking sweetness is encoded in our brains. But change is always possible. If you are ill enough with the flu that nothing tastes good, for example, an apple's sweetness can be totally erased by your perceptions. As conscious beings, we still aren't universal perceivers. Our eyes can't see objects in pitch-black darkness. If the human brain could detect ultrasound frequencies and infrared light, traits found elsewhere in nature, among bats, sharks, reptiles, and so on, those abilities would get translated into how our brain functions. Yet we can go beyond our limited hardwiring by developing instruments for detecting frequencies of lights and sound where our senses leave off. In that sense, we've turned ourselves into potential universal perceivers after all. As choice makers go, we seem to be the champions in nature. There seem to be many things we can't choose to change, such as gravity, the hardness of rocks, and the solidity of a brick wall. Some distinctions need to be made, therefore. Our perceptions come in three types: perceptions we can't change, perceptions we can change, perceptions that sit on the borderline, being sometimes changeable and sometimes not. In your personal reality, all three kinds mix and match. If you don't like the color of the shirt you're wearing, you can change it. That qualifies as a changeable perception. If you can't walk through walls, that falls among the unchangeable perceptions. One could continue with hundreds of examples from each category. The spice of life comes from the perceptions we change, while the solid security of life comes from the ones we can't change. If you could decide not to obey the law of gravity on Mondays, a world of chaos would ensue, beginning with your body vanishing in a misty cloud of atoms. But what's truly fascinating is the third category: the perceptions we can sometimes change and sometimes cannot. This is where quantum theory made our participation in nature more puzzling and more enticing at the same time. It created a shadow zone where particles and people both can make decisions. Being passively present without participating was no longer an option. Every perception is an act of participation in reality. If you perceive another person as the love of your life, your actions will lead you into areas of reality unknown before that perception. Every day our actions exist on the cutting edge of evolution, the frontier where the mind is caught between caution and curiosity. The most obvious example is miracles. Who wouldn't love to believe that a human being once walked on water? That faith can cure cancer overnight? That the dead are in communication with the living? The controversy over miracles isn't whether they can occur, however, but in what category they belong to. A miracle is only available if it fits into the third category: things that sometimes occur and sometimes don't. Of course, you can always practice total exclusion, the fixed attitude of atheists and skeptics, or inclusion, the fixed attitude of the religiously devout. And if you have no fixed attitude, then you belong in the company of visionary quantum pioneer Wolfgang Pauli, who said, "It is my personal opinion that in the science of the future, reality will neither be psychic nor physical, but somehow both and somehow neither." By using a word that science shuns, psychic, Pauli was pointed to a kind of ultimate mystery. The vast physical mechanism we call the universe is on dual control, obeying natural laws and thoughts at the same time. This is the basic reason we presently occupy an uncertain universe. But Pauli pointed the way to a solution when he predicted that reality's amalgam of mind and matter would be both and neither at the same time. This sounds like a paradox, so we'll unravel it to reveal why Pauli was simply stating an undeniable truth. Qualia: reality is up for grabs. Let's bring this discussion to the personal level. Which parts of your own reality can you change, using only your mind, that actually make a difference? The answer requires a new term in our kit bag: qualia. The concept is tremendously important, even though the average person has never heard of it. With qualia, you can change your perceptions or not. With qualia, you can alter reality or not. Qualia refers to how we experience life, rather than how we measure it. The word qualia, which is Latin for qualities, is a tag for a world that is as far-reaching as quantum physics, but points in the opposite direction, away from physical objects and toward subjective experience. Whereas quanta are packets of energy, qualia are the everyday qualities of existence: light, sound, color, shape, texture, whose revolutionary implications we've already begun to describe. You experience the world right this minute as qualia. It's the glue that holds the five senses together. The scent of a rose is a qualia. We use the same word in singular and plural, as are the velvety texture of its petals, their colors and hue, shadows and folds. Looking at everyday experience through the perspective of the brain, psychiatrist and neural theorist Daniel Siegel's model for reality, In Here, is SIFT: sensation, image, feeling, thought. No matter what's happening to you right this minute, your brain is registering either a sensation: I'm hot, this room is stuffy, the bed sheets are soft. An image: the sunset is brilliant. I see my grandmother's face in my mind's eye. My keys are on the dining room table. A feeling: I'm pretty happy. Losing my job makes me worried. I love my kids. Or a thought: I'm planning a vacation. I just read an interesting article. I wonder what's for dinner. Qualia are everywhere. Nothing can happen without them, which means that if you participate in reality using a human brain, your world consists of qualia. If there is a reality that exists outside what we perceive, it is inconceivable, literally. Once you subtract everything you can sense, imagine, feel, or think about, there's nothing left. Here's the kicker. Because qualia are subjective, they directly attack the objectivity of modern science. Moreover, because experience is meaningful, qualia attack the model of random, meaningless nature. Yet even more is at stake. As its most revolutionary claim, qualia science declares that only subjective experience is reliable. At first glance, this statement seems preposterous, especially for a scientist. Subjectivity is notorious for being unreliable. Are people given the right to say, "I don't like gravity, take it away," like a restaurant customer who doesn't like the looks of his entree? No, because as we saw, some things can't be changed simply by wishing them to change. Yet the argument about unreliability doesn't hold water. It is only plausible if your yardstick is measurement. If a stranger asks for directions and person A tells him to go west 1 mile while person B tells him to go east 2 miles, a map settles which one is right. But measurement is a red herring. Einstein proved once and for all that nothing, which means absolutely nothing, is immune to relativity, and relativity is all about perception. If you are riding in a spaceship lifting from Earth, your body is exposed to many G's of gravitational force. An astronaut feels incredibly heavy during liftoff, and his perception is the real thing. Acceleration, according to Einstein, is the same as real gravity. Likewise, the color blue doesn't exist without an eye that responds to light like the human eye. If a Martian landed and said with admiration, "The sky on Earth is grimmick," a human being would have no way to understand what is meant, because grimmick isn't a color in our reality, and we don't even know if grimmick is a color. Qualia are the true building blocks of reality. You can lead your whole life without taking a scientific measurement, but a scientist cannot do anything without sight, sound, touch, taste, and smell. If you love the smell of boiled cabbage while someone else hates it, this doesn't prove that subjectivity is unreliable. It proves that we have infinite creative freedom in the playground of qualia. So-called objective measurements are just isolated snapshots, a snatched glimpse of the actual fluidity of experience. These snapshots are at once true and false. Imagine that you are a worried father of a wayward teenage daughter, and you've hired a private detective to follow her. After a week, he brings you a batch of photos. One shows your daughter trying on shoes, while others show her flashing a fake ID at a bar, sneaking a smoke in an alley, and texting to a girlfriend at the movies. Each snapshot is true, but as a composite, they capture nothing essential about your daughter except that this composite has many facets that are loosely connected. A set of snapshots taken the following week would show her visiting a sick friend at the hospital and volunteering at an animal shelter contradicts the pattern suggested by the first set. Physics finds itself in the same position, with the exception that it must fit together thousands of isolated observations, and the most basic ones, focusing on subatomic particles, last only a few thousandths of a second. By contrast, qualia are constant and continuously connected. If you replace the snapshots of nature's details with an endless movie, the universe is actually a mirror of the human nervous system. Physicist Freeman Dyson supports this conclusion. Life may have succeeded against all odds in molding a universe to its purposes. Behind the mask of a cosmic machine whose parts can be calculated and tinkered with, the universe is humanized. There is no other way it can exist, in fact, since nothing out there can be experienced except in our own consciousness. We are following the trail pioneered by physicist David Bohm, among others, when he wrote, "In some sense, man is a microcosm of the universe. Therefore, what man is a clue to the universe." But when physicalists get backed into a corner, their defensive tactics aren't subtle. To discredit qualia, examples like the following are frequently used. Forget your metaphysics. Reality is a given. If you get hit by a bus, your whole theory goes out the window. You'll be just as dead as anyone else. Getting squashed in an encounter with a bus seems like a convincing outcome to our common sense. And for the bus, you can substitute a car, train, or brick wall. But physicalism can't explain why a bus, train, or brick wall is hard to begin with, given that all matter is more than 99.9999% empty space. The standard answer, that hardness results from the opposition of electromagnetic charges,